There was no difference in the way Matt walked when he came to the street. Before, he had come with his head averted, with his hat pulled low over his eyes. Now, leaving the alley, he strolled along boldly, looking each man he met straight in the eyes. The third one recognized him. Matt saw the man's face pale, saw his mouth drop open.
It's Hurst!
He went on past and felt the man's eyes boring into his back. He waited another instant and then stole a quick look behind him. The man ran frantically up the street toward the center of town until he got out of pistol range.
Matt! Hurst! The damn skunk's right here in town! Bold as brass! It's Matt Hurst! Look!
Matt smiled faintly. He continued to walk unhurriedly. Feigning surprise, Matt looked around. He could see them coming, a ragged line of them, like skirmishers in an Indian battle. Some of them were on horseback. As they came, order began to emerge from their confusion. Matt heard the authoritative voice of Judge Fisher, saw his tall, spare figure in the vanguard of the approaching mob. Matt broke into a hard run. He mounted and spurred his horse savagely and went out of town at a hard gallop, with his mounted pursuers only a short 100 feet behind. For the first 2 miles, Matt rode as hard as he could and barely managed to stay out of range of their booming guns. But at last, they apparently decided to wait for the remainder of the mob to catch up and so slowed to a walk. They had seen the plain trail he made in the snow and knew he couldn't get away. The animal was breathing hard, sweating heavily, and was tired, hardly in condition to serve a man who had to escape. At a walk, then, Matt left the road and pointed the horse toward Rocking H. But as he rose, he began to doubt the wisdom of Lily's suggestion.
I just don't know if this'll work.
He loosened the bandana around his throat instinctively as he thought of the rope they would put around his neck. Always behind him were the angry ones, the ones who wanted his blood. A couple of miles short of Rocking H, another group pounded up to join the first. Immediately, they all surged forward at a hard run. Matt shrugged and touched the roan with his spurs. Rested a little, the animal answered with a burst of speed. At last, Matt rode inside of the Rocking H. The yard was jammed with the horses of the sheriff's posse. There was a cluster of men before the dugout cellar. Matt saw Tillman sitting dejectedly on a box. A white bandage around his jaw, tied up on top of his head, made him stand out plainly. Matt galloped into the yard.
"Here I am, Sheriff! Come and get me!"
He rode out away from the ranch before they recovered from their surprise enough to reach for their guns. Immediately after leaving, Matt slowed the roan a little. He knew they'd be milling around in the yard for a while before they got organized. Grimly, he realized that when they did, there would be over 50 of them on his trail. Well ahead of them, he reached the place where the lane to DT joined the road. After dismounting, he concealed his horse in a dry wash, and with his rifle poked up out of that same wash, settled himself to wait. Lily watched the angry crowd leave in pursuit. There was something cold about them all that struck terror to Lily's heart. They would be merciless when they caught Matt. For in the minds of all, he was convicted, guilty. The word of a woman, particularly a woman such as Elaine Tillman, could not be doubted. Lily felt a cold touch of fear in her spine. She knew abruptly that if her plan failed, then Matt Hurst's blood would be on her hands. She thought, too, of the sheriff's love for Elaine, thinking he would not be inclined to believe Matt's story, that Elaine deliberately lied about his attacking her. She was aware, as well, that Matt, knowing his own innocence, would rely too much on his ability to convince the others of it. Yet she knew the men of this country, and she knew that not one of them would consent to a hanging if a woman were present. Though she wore a full-length skirt, Lily rode astride. She was not much of a rider, and her horse was old and patient. Lily had no spurs, but a small quirt.
Come on! Ugh!
She took it down and belabored the old horse's rump until he lifted resentfully into a half-hearted trot. The miles dropped behind with agonizing slowness. Tears of helpless frustration welled up into Lily's blue eyes and ran across her cheeks unheeded.
Oh, God. Let me get there in time. Let me get there in time.
She thought of the short time she had known Matt Hurst and of how much he had come to mean to her. She knew that in Matt lay a great capacity for living. She wondered if his feelings toward her were the same as hers toward him. Perhaps he only felt a normal man's hunger for a woman, and perhaps that explained his taking her in his arms, his kissing her. The thought depressed her, and again she began to quirt her horse. She had to beat them to Matt. She had to. She almost passed the turnoff that went into Tillman's place, but reined in abruptly and whirled around as a call came to her from a dry wash off from the road.
Lily! Turn that horse around and get back into town. They'll be here any minute. Son of a... Distract them for just a minute. Stop them here at the forks. Then you get back into town.
Lily raised her hand. The sheriff scowled at her.
What are you doing away out here, Miss Kibben? Don't you know Matt Hurst is somewheres around?
He turned to his posse.
Samuel's ride into town with her. See she gets there safe.
For an instant, there was silence.
Don't a damn one of you stir a hair. I got a rifle here, and I'll use it. Make no mistake about that.
Careful, boys. Do what he says. Any man that would force a woman...
Shut up!
Judge Fisher, who led the posse from town chasing Matt, craned in the saddle.
What's the idea, Hurst? What do you want?
I want you to look at something. You and the sheriff. The rest of you stay put.
I suppose you want us to believe you never touched Miss Tillman.
Exactly that. Lily, take the sheriff and the judge and circle around to Tillman's lane. Pick up Elaine's tracks in the snow and follow them here to the main road.
What'll that prove?
It'll prove that I was never closer than 10 feet to Elaine, except at the time she cut my cinch latigo. You'll find her hairpins and buttons from her coat lying there at the fork, and not a damn track but hers anywhere around. I'm a slick article, Judge, but not slick enough to attack a woman without my tracks mixing with hers. Go on, take a look.
Judge Fisher reined his horse over and crossed to the Tillman lane. With his eyes on the ground, with the sheriff and Lily following him, he traced Elaine's track to the main road, careful not to cross or foul any of them with his own.
Elaine Tillman lied. Tracks say Matt's telling the truth. All right. Any of you that want to, come over here and look for yourselves. Careful, though. I don't want these tracks messed up.
Now, why in the hell would a woman do a thing like that?
I reckon she done it to save Dell.
Lily felt tears of relief welling up in her eyes. Still holding the rifle cautiously, Matt climbed up out of the wash. He looked directly at the sheriff.
You've got Dale Tillman. You've got his confession and 2 witnesses to back it up. What are you going to do about it?
I'll bring Tillman in.
Lily saw a shiftiness about the sheriff's eyes that betrayed him. She looked at the man and felt a reluctant pity. Alf Polk sat in a squeeze, all right. He was desperately in love with Elaine. He had probably talked to Elaine before leaving town, and Lily guessed she put the same price on herself for Alf that she had for Matt. That price, Dell's freedom. It was a price Alf was prepared to pay. The shiftiness of his eyes told Lily that. The sheriff turned toward the posse.
Go on back to town. I won't need any help bringing in Tillman.
That was apparently the final tip-off to Matt, if one had been needed. He walked over to the wash and got his horse. He rode up and looked at Lily with warmth in his eyes.
Go with him. I'll see you later.
What are you gonna do?
I've gotta see Kip. And Lily?
What, Matt?
I owe you more than I can ever pay. I owe you my life.
She was wordless, but her eyes told him many things. Her eyes promised him the world if he came back to her. And her eyes told him that she knew what he intended to do, but she stood silent. Matt wheeled his horse and rode away at a gallop. He turned at the crest and looked back. Lily had not moved. She was watching him, and she lifted a hand in farewell as he rode down the slope and dropped from sight. Riding out, he had pointed his horse toward Rocking H, but as soon as he dropped out of sight, he veered away from that course and took a direct one toward Tillman's DT. He rode in openly to the bunkhouse, and his eyes were quick to spot 2 horses, sweated and unsaddled, which had been turned into the corral to cool.
Olaf!
Olaf Skirrick came to the door, hulking, blonde, cold as ice and scowling.
Get the hell out of here before something happens to you. I still remember that clout you gave me on the neck.
You'll get more than that before I'm through.
Olaf started toward him.
Hold it! The jig's up, Olaf! Tillman's confessed to the sheriff that you and he murdered Dan and my brothers. He's confessed that they weren't moving DT stock but their own. Somebody saw what happened that day. Kip Reynolds was along.
He grinned at Olaf's open-mouthed amazement, fully aware that when the big foreman recovered from it, he'd be as dangerous as a grizzly bear.
Joe Furness got a look at some of the brands that day, and you told Joe you'd kill him if he told, didn't you? Well, you won't be killing anyone, Olaf, because you'll be in jail. And when you are, Joe will tell what he knows. The other two will probably be let off pretty easy. They thought what they were doing was on the level, if not quite legal. But you knew better.
Olaf's mouth snapped shut, and his eyes glittered. His huge body seemed to go tense and still. Matt could see Olaf figuring on making a play. The man knew he was hooked. Matt knew his own skill with a gun. He knew himself to be fairly fast. He knew as well that Olaf Skjerik, for all his bulk, was supposed to have a lightning draw. It was probably what Tillman hired him for. Matt faced this as he faced everything else since alighting from the train at Granada with fatalistic concern. Whatever the outcome of this battle, he had won. He clung to that belief. He had won vengeance for Dan and Frankie and Will and cleared the Hearst name. But remembering Lily Kibben, he knew he didn't want to die. Matt glued his eyes to the foreman's and waited. The waiting grew long and intolerable.
Scared, Olaf? You've got guts enough to hang an innocent man, but have you got guts enough to face one who can shoot back?
Olaf's face twitched, and Matt heard the slightest movements behind him and off to one side toward the house. He felt cold sweat break over his body. He dared not turn his head for even a lightning glance. Olaf's face grew into a cruel expression of triumph. Matt never took his eyes from Olaf's face.
How did you get away from Rockin' H, Dale? Didn't Alf leave a guard over you?
Only Kip. He got careless and I slugged him.
There was a momentary silence. Matt's hands were sweating and he knew the palms would be slick as he grabbed for his gun. But he dared not try to wipe them on the sides of his pants. He dared not move those hands, for when he did, bullets would come at him.
Shake him, Olaf!
Olaf's hand sped for his gun.
Matt!
Matt felt a savage blow in his thigh. It was as if a horse had kicked it out from under him. He drove backward, falling. Tillman's gun spoke, the bullet cutting air where Matt had stood but a split second before. Rolling, forgetting Olaf for the moment, Matt brought his gun from beneath his body and snapped a swift shot at Tillman's crouching form. Tillman never got off a second shot. He dropped his gun and clawed at his throat an instant before he collapsed.
Matt!
Matt forced himself up to a sitting position and looked at Olaf. The foreman stood solidly on his feet, his gun smoking in his hand. But he didn't fire again. He stood that way for what seemed an eternity, and at last began to sway like a giant pine in a gale. A red spot on his shirt front began to spread. Matt struggled up to his knees, sick and dizzy with the pain in his thigh. He felt the softness of Lily as she crouched beside him, unmindful of the danger that yet lurked in Olaf Skjerik's gun. Matt started to push her away and stopped as he saw Olaf collapse onto the hard-packed snow. He turned a little, realizing that her arms were around him, that her tear-dampened face was pressed very close against his own.
Lily, I told you to go to town. I told you to go to town.
Her lips were salty with tears, but unbelievably sweet for all of that.
Matt, I belong with you. I belong with you.
Yeah, you do.
But it took her second kiss to convince him that he was not delirious, that he wasn't dreaming this. The pain in the flesh wound in his thigh disappeared, and he felt as though he were 10 feet tall. Cold Cure for Woolly Fever by Peter Dawson.
Big Bill.
Calling Bill's attention to the stranger on the palomino coming down the pass trail, Jesusita leaned languorously in the cantina doorway in one of those typically provocative attitudes that was Big Bill's reason for staying on here the last 4 days. Now, annoyed by the way she studied this oncoming rider so fixedly, he shifted his tobacco from one cheek to the other.
Never did see a runt forking that good a horse but what it was stole.
Jesusita shrugged one shoulder, her dark eyes smoldering as they rocked around to him, then away again.
Say the word, muchacha, and that palomino is yours.
Ha! The gringo talk big. I no want a caballo. Not nothing from you.
Evaristo, her cousin, had been whittling at a knot on the step log, his ever-drowsy glance on the rider who was coming into sight again from behind the spruce.
This runt, you call him. He wear the two big guns, and he's not so little. The horse, she's too big to make him look big.
He's a runt.
Shortly, Bill and Evaristo went indoors. The cantina, with its offering of food and lodging, had thrived, first because of Jesusita's beauty, and secondly because she, Evaristo, and Papa, who spent most of his hours asleep by the stove, all pretended to see nothing and know even less than nothing about the comings and goings along this trail. For the trail led from sheep country in the broad valley below to a vast cattle range the other side of the pass, and with the feeling strong between the two factions, the running of such an establishment called for a certain finesse. So when the stranger got down from his palomino and stepped in through the swing doors some minutes later, Jesusita was behind the bar rinsing lamp chimneys in hot soapy water. Big Bill was bellied to the counter opposite her, sipping a glass of tequila. Evaristo was doing something with a deck of cards at the room's only table, and Papa's unshaven chin was resting exactly where it usually did, on the front of his none-too-clean flannel shirt.
Afternoon, folks.
Buenos tardes, señor.
Her demure greeting was so at odds with that bolt of lightning quality Bill had so constantly sampled from her that Bill now pushed his paunch 2 inches from the bar and turned to eye the stranger. What he saw rocked him back on his run-over heels. The man was, as Evaristo had said, not small. Big Bill still topped his even 6 feet by a good 4 inches, but that wasn't what Bill noticed. Nor did he particularly note the stranger's blondness or the lean, handsome face. There was something else to displease his belligerent eye. The stranger's outfit was expensive. A nicely pressed black coat hung open over a fiery red shirt. The boots, below clean waist overalls, also pressed, were fancy stitched and polished till they shone. The pale gray hat was new, expensive, and didn't show any dust. Despite all this, it was 3 other items that had jolted Bill. 2 were a matching pair of horn-handled Colts riding low along the stranger's flat thighs, the holsters thonged. The 3rd was the ivory handle of a knife showing above the top of the polished right boot. Big Bill took a certain pride in the armament he carried and on his ability to use same. He'd done some carving on the cedar handle of his navy colt in the way of uniform notches, representing certain luckless individuals who had had various and sundry fallings out with him. He always carried a big clasp knife in a pocket of his Levi's, one that would snap open, and on several occasions he had wielded it in what he invariably called self-defense, though his favorite close-in weapon was the neck end of a broken bottle. He was big. He could use knife, gun, or bottle expertly. He'd never run across the man he couldn't lick, nor had he ever missed an opportunity for showing himself the better man when meeting any individual who had the look of thinking himself able to take care of trouble. So now, after his deliberate inspection of the fancied-up stranger, Big Bill even more deliberately scowled and, disdaining any reply to the other's greeting, turned back to his glass.
Handle's Matt, folks. Who wet their whistle with me? Make it a whiskey, Senorita.
Evaristo at once came over to the counter, grinning and nodding as he took the bottle the stranger passed him and filled his glass.
Gracias, senor. Gracias.
The stranger offered Big Bill the bottle.
I pass.
Every man to his own taste. To all beautiful women.
Afterward, he tossed a silver dollar to the counter, and Jesusita made change. A half dollar and 2 dimes.
You didn't take out enough, miss.
15 cents to the drink, senor.
Sheep? Sheep! What about sheep?
Bill wheeled with the clumsiness of a grizzly to throw what tequila remained in his glass squarely into the stranger's eyes. Matt's right hand dropped to his coat so fast the eye could scarcely follow. The hammer click of Bill's weapon was all that stopped the stranger's draw. Smiling broadly then, the tequila dripping from his chin, Matt lifted his empty hand carefully and laid it palm down on the bar. Matt looked up at Bill, who held the Colt still lined at the middle button on his shirt.
Just what did I say to upset you, friend? Sheep! What the hell else? The only sheepman I drink alongside is a dead one. Now, you got me wrong. Fact is, I can't stand the stink of sheep. So tell the senorita you're sorry. Then you can put that hog leg away and fill your glass again. It's my treat.
Sorry for what? Turn yourself around and keep them hands where they are.
Reaching out roughly and grabbing Matt by the arm, he pushed him around. Then, ramming the muzzle of his Colt at the man's spine, he relieved him of his pair of matched 45s.
Next time you figure to drink alongside a cattleman, bring your big brother with you, runt.
And with that, Bill headed for the doors, satisfied that when Jesusita had time to consider the last few moments, she would see him for what he was, a brave and strong man. He carried Matt's 2 guns by their trigger guards hanging from his big left index finger. And as he came up on the doors, he reached out with his other hand to push them aside. A split second later, Bill saw Matt's ivory-handled knife quivering in the door panel.
Now hold on.
The color drained from Big Bill's face. He stood there, rigid, his back still to the room.
You forgot to tell the senorita you're sorry, friend.
Big Bill thought to drop the 3 guns then.
I reckon I done wrong, muchacha.
Now that's real nice sentiment. You can trot along if you feel like it. Ornery cousin, eh?
Bill, he's the big pig. He come here 3-4 days ago. He said to me, muchacha, you and me go to see priest and get married, no? You leave this place where the men, she's always trying to kiss you and make the love. What about it, Jesusita? And I tell him, no man make the love to me, for I hit and bite if she do. So Big Bill, he laugh and pinch me on the arm. I hit him. Then he pinch me other places, and I hit him some more. But still, he think this is the way I make the love to him, so he hang round. I take his money and let him make the big eyes. What I care?
Matt was only vaguely aware of what she'd been saying, so entranced was he by the play of her eyes and graceful, quick motions of her hands.
Sita, you're the prettiest thing I ever laid eyes on.
Jesusita liked that. Evaristo, watching, could hardly believe his eyes, for he knew she had been telling the truth about not tolerating the advances of men customers. Yet here she was, smiling in confusion, obviously liking the stranger's words.
That's what Bill say. You beautiful muchacha. So when he say it, I hit him. Like this.
Ah!
Oh, senor! Oh, I no mean that! Oh.
Just as quickly as she'd moved a moment ago, she now leaned closer to him and patted his cheek.
Oh, pobrecito. For a minute, I think you Bill. I so sorry, Senor Matt.
Didn't hurt a bit, senorita. Not a bit.
Matt, that's one nice handle. Matt, very nice.
Couldn't we, that is, couldn't you and me go down to town some night and kick up our heels at a dance, Sita?
No. Papa, he take the belt and weep.
Unashamedly, her hand went to her backside.
You come see me here, Matt. We sit on the portal one night till Papa asleep, no?
Sure. Sure thing.
But not in the town. The town, she stink of sheep. Once he was different. When I the little girl, everyone they happy. Papa, he was the vaquero then. He rope the big steer and twist his tail. But then the sheepmans come in, and with the guns they fight and drive the cattlemans out. So now Papa, he have the sickness of the heart, and he sit there all day dreaming when he was the one fine vaquero and run the cattle.
Matt's look had turned grave, and now he glanced at Papa in the chair by the stove.
I've heard about your ruckus here. No one's tried to push these sheep lovers out of the valley since then?
They always talking, but no one. He do nothing. Bill, he say he go down to rob the bank because he ate the sheep man. But all he do is talk big. Big Wind, I call him. He got the big talk from the big belly.
So Bill would like to bust open the bank, eh?
He like to find, but he have no what you call the guts.
Guts.
That's what I say, Matt. The guts.
Maybe Bill and I could get along.
Matt moved on over from the bar then and picked up the guns, holstering his own pair and ramming Bill's through the belt of his Levi's.
You no go out there, Matt. Bill, he kill you. He the one tough hombre. He got the rifle on his horse.
Matt looked out over the saloon doors.
So I see. He's got the rifle right enough, but not his horse. He's getting on to Whitey.
Whitey?
My Palomino.
His smile still holding, he turned and came back to the bar. He picked up the bottle and laid $2 silver on the counter.
This Bill and I are going to make some medicine, Sita.
Matt, stay with me.
At that moment, Big Bill, astride the Palomino, was turning out from the cantina's tie rail. He saw Matt, and his look turning ugly, he leveled the .30-30 Winchester he'd been holding with the stock cradled against his thigh.
Back in there, runt.
Matt's smile only widened. At that sound, the Palomino suddenly reared high on his hind legs. There was a point beyond which Matt didn't want to humiliate the big man, so he wasn't smiling.
Whitey's a handful, Bill. Should have warned you. That's a trick I taught him.
Big Bill's face was dark with an apoplectic look, and his furious glance went to the carbine. But it was too far beyond his reach to give him a chance against an even average draw. So he picked his hat out of the road, beat the dust from it, clamped it on his head, and heaved his vast bulk up to his feet. Matt drew Bill's .44, held it out to him butt foremost. At the same time, he hefted the bottle in his other hand.
Let's you and me pick a spot of shade and wash the dust out of our windpipes. I got something to talk over with you.
Bill's angry glance became uncertain now. With a down-lipped sneer, he took his gun and stood glowering down on the smaller man, as though undecided as to what to do next. But something in Matt's eyes made him finally holster the weapon. Then, grudgingly, he accepted the bottle. Matt led the way to the shady side of the cantina. There he sat with his back to the wall, putting the bottle between them as Bill joined him.
A girl in there says you got a notion to bust open the bank yonder, Bill. Now you and me got something in common.
What?
Hating sheep and wanting to lay hands on some easy sheep money.
Well, you might say I got my eye on that there bank.
Think the two of us together could pull the thing off? Of course, if you think it's too risky.
Who the hell said I thought that? Ain't nothing to be afraid of. Except maybe for that tin safe being so full of money, two men couldn't haul it away.
We could make two trips.
Here's the way she looks to me. They've ordered a new safe to be shipped in, but she ain't here yet. We just caught them with their galluses down. They've got the back wall of the bank knocked out with a hole big enough to drive a team through so they can get the new safe in when she comes. The thing's boarded over now, and that sheep-loving Sheriff Clyde Case takes turns with his deputy day and night watching to see no one comes along with a hammer and breaks in. Must be close to 30 or 40,000 in the old safe.
How much of a job will it be to open the thing?
I got a knife in my pocket. It'll do the job slick as a whistle.
Then let's do it tonight.
Tonight? Why? Well, you see, I was thinking me and Jesusita might go for a walk up toward the pass tonight.
Now, that's a shame. Here, I thought you might help.
Well, hadn't we ought to go down to the bank and look the thing over first? You, I mean?
Just what I was thinking. Give me the rest of the afternoon and I'll meet you wherever you say. Let the girl wait, Bill.
You looked pretty sweet on her in there.
Sure. I always give them a try, Bill. But if she's yours, I'll lay off.
She damn well is. You and me gotta get that straight if we're siding each other.
That's easy. So long as we're partners, we don't mix our women. Okay?
Bill nodded. He was smiling for the first time as he wrapped his big fist around Matt's and shook it. Matt went straight to the hotel, his bedroll slung over his shoulder, and there were a half dozen townsmen in the lobby.
The best room you got, friend, with a bath.
Mister, there ain't a foot of plumbing on the premises.
No? Well, maybe I'll build a hotel of my own that has some. This is sure a wore-out-looking settlement, friend. Give me the best you got.
Matt's next stop along the street was at a shack with a shingle hanging over its door bearing the legend, Land for Sale, Ranch and Town Properties. He was in there a good 20 minutes, and as soon as he left, crossing over to the bank, Mayor Williams and two other men who had been in the hotel lobby went into the shack to ask what had gone on.
Yeah, well, there was plenty going on in there. North took out options on every outfit we got for sale, including Ives' place. And on those 8 lots down the street where we give up building the new opera house.
The mayor could hardly believe the news.
God in heaven, who is he?
Calls himself North, Matthew.
We know that, but where's he from?
He didn't say and I didn't ask. One thing though, he ain't so taken with the idea of running sheep. I told him if he was settling here to be sheep or nothing. He just looked at me sort of strange, like I needed a haircut maybe or a shave. Said he'd think it over, that he wanted to invest around $100,000 in good grass and town lots and...
$100,000? Let's get on over and see Caleb. He may know more about North.
But 2 minutes later, Caleb West, president of the bank, couldn't add much to what they already knew of the stranger, except that he'd refused to bank any money until the present safe was replaced by an adequate vault.
Vault? You didn't order no vault, Caleb.
Who said I did? But I can order one in place of the new safe, can't I? Fact is, I already got a man riding across the junction to send a telegram about it.
While they were speculating further on the importance of this Matthew North's arrival and on what his money would do for the town, Sheriff Clyde Case joined them.
You boys better take a good look at my Dodgers before you get so steamed up over this bird.
Clyde, for the love of the good Lord, why spoil our fun? You'd suspect your grandmother of being a squaw woman if she hadn't lived long enough to let you have a good look at her.
You go look through your Dodgers, Clyde, but danged if we'll let you insult this gentleman and scare him off.
So Case left the bank and went to his office and stubbornly set about going through his disorderly collection of reward notices. He was halfway through the stack when Matt came in off the walk.
Afternoon, Sheriff. Have a cigar?
Clyde had a guilty, surprised look as he got out of his chair and took the cigar.
Thanks, Mr. North. I've been hearing about you. Have my chair.
But Matt was noticing the Dodgers.
That's a funny thing. I dropped in here for this very reason, Sheriff. To look through your wanted notices.
Looking for one in particular?
Sure am. On the way over here, I ran onto a Jasper that had a mean pair of ears. Big as a house. Front on him like a barrel. A nose too big for his face, and they called him Bill.
Big Bill? That yellow-livered coyote, mean as a grizzly and twice as dangerous. Tell me where I can find him and I'll blow a hole through his back. His back, mind you. He's wanted on any one of 10 counts that'll hang him.
And now hold on, don't get so aforesaid. For all I know, this Big Bill may be 300 miles from here by now. On the other hand, he was headed this way.
The hell you say?
Case stepped quickly to the door.
Avery, get across here.
What's up?
Avery's my deputy. Mr. North, you got much ready cash on you?
Would a couple thousand be what you call ready?
Ready and then some. Well, you hide that there money pronto. If Big Bill breezes through here and finds there's a well-heeled stranger in town, he'll take every damn nickel you got.
No one takes my nickels.
You pay attention to what I'm telling you. Avery, go to the hardware and get every shotgun Blaine's got in the place. Hand them out to the best shots. Beginning at dark, we're going to have 20 armed men prowling this street.
Well, how come?
How come? Big Bill's been seen close to here, and for all we know, he'll probably...
Why get so head up? If the law gets this spooky over one lone wolf, maybe I ought to look for some other place to settle.
Mr. North, you got us wrong.
For the next several minutes, Case did his best to convince Matt that Pleasantville was exactly what the name would indicate. A pleasant place to live. Safe as the inside of a church at meeting time. The best climate in the world, the best of everything.
Take grass, for instance. I hear you're of a mind to buy some land. Well, sir, there ain't an animal ever lived was so sick that a week on this grass wouldn't cure him. It's plumb past believing. But we never lose a head of anything in this valley except for butchering, or some pet critter now and then dying of old age. Ever see anything to beat the looks of them sheep you passed on the way in?
I kind of hope to run cattle, Sheriff.
Nope. Sheep's all we run here. The time was 10 or 12 years ago when they ran cattle. Them damn critters nearly ruined the valley. You know how cattle are pulling up the grass by the roots.
I always thought it was the other way around.
No, sir, you take my word for it, neighbor. It's cattle and not sheep that ruin the range. So, a few of us up and decide we'll save what's left. For a week or two, it was nip and tuck. The lead flying so thick you didn't dare set foot outdoors by day. Then finally, we drove Matt Rivers and his gang through the pass.
Did you say Matt Rivers?
Matt Rivers. He was leader of them cattlemen. Set up a lot like you, come to think of it. Your build, them big shoulders and all, and pale hair like yours.
That's funny. Matt's my first name, too. We got a passel of Rivers in one branch of our family, and for a minute here, I was thinking this man you mentioned might be some kin, but I reckon not.
Probably not, or you'd have heard of him before now. We chased him and his bunch over the pass, and later we heard he had died from a chunk of lead through his middle. They tell me you've taken out an option to buy Ives' place, among others. That's the old Rivers layout, the old Anvil brand.
You don't say.
Yep, and a right nice layout it is, too. Ives, he wants to sell on account of being ready to retire. He's made a big killing up there on that anvil grass with all the water and meadow he's got, and he'll sell for the right price. $30,000, they say.
That's the price quoted to me.
Well, sir, you couldn't find a better place at a better price. Take it before Ives changes his mind. And try sheep, Mr. North. You can't go wrong on a wool crop.
I'll think it over. See you later, Sheriff.
He hadn't gone 20 steps when a portly individual standing at the walk's edge below the jail stopped him.
Mr. North, let me introduce myself. I'm Mayor Williams. Some of the boys are hoisting one across in the Nugget. Since it's the shank of the day, we'd admire to have you join us.
Yeah, that's real friendly of you.
During the hour he spent in very pleasant company in the Nugget, he several times put a hand in his near-empty pocket, announcing that the next round of drinks was his. But each time his offer brought a storm of protest, for several others had joined the gathering, and new money was anything but scarce. Several of these last joiners were carrying shotguns, the ones the sheriff had ordered handed out at the hardware store. And as they took their drinks, they passed the guns across the bar to the apron for safekeeping, so that by the real shank of the evening, supper time, the back bar looked like a gun case with its array of new and shiny weapons. When the subject of eating presented itself, Matt was invited to dine with several of the town's most eminent citizens. He graciously accepted. The meal was larded with much boisterous whiskey-livened talk and consumed an hour and a half. Toward the end of it, Matt was beginning to feel uneasy and kept glancing at the clock over the counter. Finally, when it appeared that the evening had only begun, Matt rose from his chair.
Gents, I thank you for one fine mess of food, but there's work to be done. If this curly wolf Big Bill is really due to shoot up the town tonight, let's get set for him.
Why, I'd almost forgot Big Bill.
The mayor wasn't too steady on his feet as he rose to stand alongside Matt, who noticed him licking his lips.
Boys, the nights are getting right chill. What say we get ourselves a bottle or two to help us last till morning?
But we left our guns at the Nugget!
That's right, we did.
They straggled out and across the street, a man on either side of the newcomer and both calling him Matt now instead of Mr. North. They finally gathered in front of the Nugget, armed with their shotguns and a quart bottle for every other man.
Where do you want us, Matt?
This matter took some thought, and for a moment Matt didn't answer.
I don't know the town, boys. Let the sheriff decide.
Where the hell is Clyde?
Out behind the bank watching the alley, ain't he?
Someone go get him.
Tell you what, I'd like to wander on out the street and look it over, get the lay of the land. While you're getting the sheriff, I'll roam about by myself a minute or two.
Mayor Williams wanted to come with him, but Matt took him aside.
Better stay with the bunch. They're liquored up and need watching. Keep your eye on them. I'll be right back.
You know, Matt, I think Clyde thought this Big Bill business up as a joke on us. Why don't we all just go in there, set ourselves down, and enjoy a few more drinks and some cigars? Maybe a game of draw.
It wasn't Clyde thought it up. It was me.
So it was. Well, you get on, and I'll keep an eye on this bunch.
Matt went on before the mayor could change his mind. Half a minute's walk brought him abreast of the big, lively corral. The street was dark here, and after a look both ways along the walks, he climbed the gate. He was coming up on the spidery black silhouette of the windmill beyond the back rails when he remembered the big log watering trough. He took off his hat and coat and, laying them aside, dipped his head into the cold water to try and regain his senses after so many drinks. Then, for some strange reason, he got to thinking of Sita and just stood there for a minute or two. He was scrubbing his face again presently, feeling his senses steadying under the chill bite of the water.
Who is it? Me! Where you been all this time?
Laying the way for an easy job.
Matt dropped the colt back into its scabbard, pulling out the tails of his shirt and using them to dry his head.
Now here's what we do.
Matt went on to explain exactly what was to happen.
So it'll be a cinch. Remember, there'll be a loose board. When I light my cigar, you go in that way. Be quiet while you're inside and wait in there till I come after you. Where the hell's all the gunny sacks?
Tied to my hull.
Then we're all set, Bill. Give me 15 minutes.
One man double-crossed me once. I drop by the cemetery at Sicaro every now and then to take flowers off his grave. His family leaves him.
That's not the way you'd want your grave treated, Bill.
You mind this now. I get my half. No matter what.
And see that I get mine. After all, I'm leaving the business of the split to you.
Without another word, Bill turned and walked away into the darkness. Mayor Williams and four men were set to watch the lower end of the street, while another group stationed themselves along the stretch of awninged walk above the hardware store.
Me? I'll go give the sheriff a hand.
No one questioned Matt's statement. It was as easy as that. So he went on down to the bank.
Who the hell's making so much noise?
Me, Sheriff. How do things look?
Oh, you, Mr. North. They don't look so good if you ask me.
Why not?
We need more men back here.
You and me can handle our end.
That seemed to quiet the lawman's jumpy nerves somewhat, and for a minute or two they talked in low voices, Matt telling Case how the townsmen had distributed themselves along the street.
How easy would it be for a man to break into the bank?
How easy is it for a kid to fight his way into a sack of candy?
Don't say. Let's take a look.
Case led the way along the bank's back wall, and after several steps, they came upon a portion of the wall that showed a lighter shadow.
If that ain't a pretty sight.
It wasn't very strong, Matt could see, even in this poor light. A rectangular hole, about as tall as he was and twice as wide, had been boarded up. He stepped in close to it and swung a boot back.
Flimsy, eh?
Don't! Hell, you'll kick the whole thing loose!
He was more right than he imagined, for Matt had seen the base of that one board swing out, the nails pulled free under his kick. Here was the first thing of the several he had mentioned to Big Bill already accomplished.
Let's take a look up at the other end.
Matt and Case walked on to the far end of the wall.
What's up in there?
Matt nodded up a passageway even narrower than the one he had traveled from the street.
Nothing! Nothing but a rain barrel in here you gotta watch out for. Right here.
Glad to know about it.
Matt held the match out openly and unshielded by his hands to light his cigar.
Put that damn thing out. You want your face shot in?
Didn't think, I reckon. You really do expect this Big Bill, Sheriff?
You're damn right I do.
Then you lead right on. Show me how to get to the street from here. I'll watch this side from the front.
Standing as he was now, Matt saw a shadow moving across toward the bank's rear wall from a shed across the way. Case was in the passageway, unable to see. Now he quickly turned and made plenty of noise in stumbling after the lawman up the length of the narrow corridor. Big Bill was on his way into the bank. He could only hope that Bill would follow the rest of his instructions to the letter. Case stopped at the head of the passageway.
Now, if I was you, I'd stand right here. You can see both ways along the street, and if there's any trouble out back, I'll holler.
Better make it good and loud.
I will.
Matt watched him saunter along the front of the bank and try the doors. Matt then knelt down and removed his boots. Case stepped out of sight into the passageway along the bank's far wall. Laying his boots aside and drawing one of his colts, Matt turned and cat-footed fast back along the corridor to the alley. When he turned into the alley, it was to hug the shadows close to the wall. He ran the last few steps across to the front of that far passageway, and as a last precaution, took off his hat and dropped it, coming to a crouch at the wall end. His head low to the ground, he looked around the corner. He heard Case stumbling toward him close by, but it was so black down that narrow alleyway that he couldn't see so much as a shadow. There was barely time for him to lift the .45 before Clyde Case stepped out into the open. Matt holstered the Colt as he pulled aside the loose board.
Okay, Bill. Everything's set.
He had barely spoken before the big man edged sideways through the narrow opening that barely let him squeeze through. Bill carried a bulging gunny sack in each hand, and one of these he quickly held out to Matt.
Here, take it.
How'd it go?
Nothing to it. Didn't even have to use the knife. Brother, we made a haul. Now, how do I get out of here?
Just the way you came, Bill. It's clear out here. Just come on through.
Matt was still speaking when Bill made a sudden move, his ham-like fist awkwardly pulling the Navy Colt from his holster.
Reach for the back of your neck, runt.
Matt was careful to keep his hands well away from his sides as he dropped the sack and lifted them.
I told you no one had ever double-crossed me.
No one's trying to double-cross you, Bill.
Damn right they ain't.
Bill started backing away into the shadows.
Now you just stay set till I'm gone, runt. If you move a finger, I'll let daylight through you.
Matt wasn't particularly alarmed, but he stayed as he was for better than a minute after Bill had edged out of sight into the blackness.
You still there?
There was no answer, and he brought his hands down. He picked up the sack and reached into it. A slow smile came to his face as he brought out a handful of paper. Even in this faint light, he could see that it was scrap paper. When he had emptied the sack, he found that it contained nothing but more scrap paper, a bundle of blotters, several unused tablets, and two empty ink bottles. Something struck him as being very funny then, and he stuffed the worthless junk back into the sack. He took one parting look at Sheriff Case before he moved back up to his own passageway. When he brushed against the rain barrel, he lifted the lid, dropped the sack into it, replaced the lid, and went on. He pulled on his boots again, went to the street head of the passageway, and sat down. He was a man of patience and made himself comfortable as he settled there to wait. Some 10 minutes later, a man with a shotgun cradled in the bend of his arm came sauntering along the far walk. By the time he was abreast, Matt had rolled up a smoke, and he took some pains to see that the match flared openly as he lit it. As though that had been a prearranged signal, the man over there left the walk and angled toward him.
That you, Clyde?
Nope. Clyde's out back.
It was one of the men who had gone with Mayor Williams.
Nothing doing as far as I can see. Think I'll go chew the fat with Clyde for a while.
There's a lot of hogwash. No one's going to bust into this place. Wish I could get some sleep.
Oh, me too. Let's see if I can talk Clyde into letting us call it off.
The man walked away, taking the far passageway toward the bank's rear.
Help! Somebody help!
Matt grinned, and just to see what would happen, drew one of his colts.
Stop! Stop!
Matt ran back toward the alley.
Don't shoot! It's me! Red!
Did you get him?
Who?
How would I know who? Who was it you yelled at? I saw him cross right here going down the alley.
I didn't yell at no one. It's Clyde.
So it was Clyde?
Oh, hell no. It wasn't Clyde. He's here, out cold.
The rest of the men came running up to Matt and Red.
Damn it, don't none of you shoot.
Shortly, one of the men who gathered about the sheriff lit a lantern, and at least two men claimed to have seen a rider heading out of the alley. But they had seen this supposed rider going in opposite directions, and Matt added to the confusion by giving his version of having shot at someone afoot.
God almighty, here's a loose board!
Where?
Where the hell do you think? Here!
The others forgot their unconscious sheriff then and crowded around Red, who was reaching out to pull the loose board in the wall aside.
The safe.
The mayor rushed Red out of the way to squeeze through the opening. Matt and the rest of the men quickly followed him.
Cleaned.
Big Bill had made a mess of things. Papers were strewn every which way in front of the safe's open door. Several empty metal boxes, their lids twisted off, lay in the litter. A rack of trays from the safe sat in a lopsided stack on the floor of the nearest teller's cage.
We're wasting time, gents. Let's throw our hulls on some nags and take a look around.
Wouldn't be no use. Whoever did it was smart enough to head for the pass off north of here.
Then let's get up there and head them off.
Uh-uh. That's cattle country beyond. No sheepmen's used that pass for the last 10 years, never come back.
Once again, a weighty silence settled over the eerily lit room. These men were speechless, dumbfounded, staring fixedly at the open safe.
Not one damn dollar left. We're stone broke. You and me and all the rest. Even Caleb West.
Don't get in such a lather. When we find out how much is missing, maybe I can help.
Only one thing had gone amiss in all of Matt's calculations. The next morning after breakfast, he ambled on along the street past the crowd gathered in front of the bank as far as the livery corral. The Palomino was gone. He really didn't feel very bad about it, nor was he very surprised. Along about 9 o'clock, as he sat on the hotel veranda, Red came over from the bank and stopped below him on the walk.
Caleb West and the directors would like to see you across there, Mr. North.
Sure.
Inside the bank, on the way to Caleb West's private office, Matt saw that no attempt had been made at cleaning up the litter alongside the safe. There were 8 men in the banker's office, which was clouded with cigar smoke. The 4 sitting at the long table at the room's center rose respectfully at Matt's entry, and it was West himself who offered his chair.
Here, sit at the head, Matt.
Always did think better on my feet, thanks. What's on your minds?
Well, Matt, Mr. North, that is, we're sort of... Well, I guess you'd say...
I guess your bank is about busted. Is that what you're trying to say, Caleb?
The banker nodded glumly.
Then you want to know if I'm going to help you.
Well, we kind of hoped you'd...
Let's not beat about the bush. You've had some bad luck. You close your doors, this range dries up and blows away. You need ready cash to stay in business, correct?
You said a mouthful.
How much did you lose?
$87,402.69.
Now that's a wad of money, even for me. How much would it take to keep you on your feet?
Well, that's a matter of question, Matt.
Could you limp along on $50,000?
We could, Matt. We could. And every man, woman, and child in the valley would thank you from the bottom of their hearts.
Now, I can swing that much without too much trouble. But there's one big hitch. Maybe you remember me saying a couple times yesterday that I don't take to sheep.
Matt, it's something you can get used to.
Not me.
Then it's no go.
If you stick to sheep. Look, gents, I just happened to stop here because this valley looked good. And because I was looking around for a few hundred or so sections of land to throw some beef onto.
A few hundred? But there ain't that much for sale around here.
There will be if I pull out and wait maybe a year. Let this bank go broke, and in a year I can buy land here at 30 cents on the dollar.
You wouldn't do that, Matt.
I damn well would if it's either that or live around the stink of sheep.
When he had finished speaking, they looked up at each other skeptically. And it was finally Williams who had the nerve to speak up.
That's putting it to us straight, boys. I, for one, could live just as long if Jenny never cooked another of those mutton shoulder roasts. And the air around here could be a bit sweeter.
Cattle will pay a man almost as good as sheep.
There was more talk, a lot more. But by the time the courthouse clock was striking 10, Matt was astride a livery horse and leaving the town behind him. Everything was settled. For a long-term loan of $50,000, the directors guaranteed him that any outfit doing business with the bank would either change over to beef or be denied any financial help whatsoever. There were hardly any brands in the valley that could get along without bank money at some time or another. He was on his way, so he told them, over the pass to the railroad to have the money sent in by express. He had assumed a distant air when they became curious as to his background. Thinking back on that, he could smile now. And just for the fun of it, he went through his pockets to see exactly what he was worth. The total came to $4.16, and in this moment he reflected somewhat bleakly that he would have to stay away from poker layouts. One having rid him of a year's savings 2 nights before he started over the pass to meet Jesusita. He'd had too much on his mind to spare her many thoughts, but now she became the core about which much of his thinking revolved. He was still trying to picture the brightness of her eyes, her slenderness and grace, wondering how much room there was in her heart for such a man as he when he brought the cantina in sight 2 hours later.
Sita!
He was swinging from the saddle at the rail by the portal when the door swung open to frame a vision of radiant loveliness for him. Her black wavy hair shone like ebony and fell loosely about her shoulders. Those gently rounded shoulders were half revealed by a white embroidered blouse of some filmy material that barely clung to them. About her small waist ran a belt of broad silver conchas, and below that a long black silk skirt nearly swept the dust as she ran out, white petticoat showing.
Matt! Oh, my poor Matt! I all the time think you killed!
He couldn't help but put his arms about her as she threw herself against him. Finally, to get a breath, she drew away, and he saw her flashing dark eyes.
Matt, you hide quick! Big Bill, he around somewheres. He tell me he kill you, pull your arms off and hit you in the face with them. All in the fight over me. So last night I cry, and this morning I still cry. And Bill, he say I am his now because he won me from you. I hit him again, but he only laugh. And then I find he give Papa the money, loss of dinero. So Papa, he tell me we go across to the town with the railroad and be married. And now Bill, somewhere out back, hitching the team for the trip. Oh, Matt, now you save me from Bill.
That I'll do. But first, we got to get something settled, muchacha. Down in the valley, there's a ranch. It's got a big house adobe shaped like the letter H. There's cottonwoods and willows all round and a creek running right past the porch. And off behind, there are hills covered with pines. And down below, there's a big meadow with a big ponderosa standing square in the middle of it all by itself. And
the anvil! The river's place! Papa, he worked there for old Matt Rivers before the shipmans she come. He was the one fine vaquero. And Papa, he still tell how he teach the little Rivers to ride, the little boy.
Papa couldn't be Miguel, could he?
Miguel, sure, he's Papa. Why, you know him?
No, that is, someone in town mentioned him to me. Sita, I just bought the...
His words broke off a fraction of a second as he noticed the cantina's swing doors slowly inching apart.
I've just bought the anvil. How would Papa and your brother like to come there to live? Papa could look after the horse string all on his own. Your brother would maybe run the kitchen for the crew. How does that sound?
Everisto, he my cousin. And me, Matt?
That's up to you, Sita. I'm nothing but a top hand that's been pretty fiddle-footed and never saved a nickel. Maybe I'd make you a poor husband.
Oh, Matt!
Again, she threw her arms around him and kissed his face. Matt noticed the doors come open violently. Inside, in the deep shadow, he saw a high shape and his frame went rigid. But then the door swung slowly shut once more.
We go now, this afternoon. I shut this place, lock it, and leave it forever. Wait, I tell Papa and Everisto.
From out back came the soft squeal of door hinges.
Big Bill's wanted on about 10 counts. He'll hang if he ever shows his face in this country again.
Matt went silent a moment and now heard hoof thuds of a horse he assumed was walking toward him along the cantina's far wall. He moved in toward the adobe wall that enclosed the portal.
There's a big reward out on him if you get him, and...
The Palomino, Big Bill in the saddle, suddenly lunged into the open from around the building's far front corner. The Navy Colt was in Bill's hand. It swung down and into line with Matt as Matt forgot his dignity and dove sprawling behind the wall.
Come on out and fight, runt!
Matt's impulse was to reach for one of his 45s. Instead, he smiled. Then, taking off his hat, he crawled to the wall's edge and looked on out to the road. The Palomino was running fast, already out of sure range for a colt. Several seconds later, Matt stood up and stepped out into the open.
Poor fool never learns.
Matt, who is these shots?
Watch.
Jesusita looked up the trail in time to see the horse slide to a sudden stop, then rear sharply, viciously. By this time, Big Bill wasn't unseated, as he had been here in front of the cantina yesterday. Matt's look turned worried. This had its immediate effect. The Palomino came down on all 4 feet, then suddenly his 4 legs buckled, his head went down, and it was all Big Bill could do to take his boot from the stirrup and jump for his life as the horse threatened to roll onto him. Matt would have lost a horse then if the Palomino hadn't been fast getting to his feet again and going away, for Bill, lying there in the dust, had to roll over to pull his colt. The big man hauled himself to his feet and started running in panic. Never had Big Bill made such tracks. He went out the trail almost as fast as the Palomino was running in along it. And just for the fun of it, Matt raised his pistol.
Kill him! Kill him dead, Matt!
He's scared. Really scared. And he'll never be back.
Matt threw another bullet a pace or two ahead of Bill and to one side. Bill rounded a far bend and disappeared behind the pines.
Bill, he have these sore feet tonight.
Just then, the Palomino came galloping back to Matt. Matt fumbled at the thongs of the nearest pouch on the saddle's cantle. He got the pouch open finally and looked inside.
What is it, Matt?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Just something I loaned Bill last night. For a minute there, I thought he forgot to give it back. Now let's get a move on, Sita. I'd like to have a look at that layout before dark.